Chapter 59. For 3 days, or rather 3 nights, nothing disturbed their peace. When the usual prison work was finished, which consisted in separating the dead from the living, and the grievously sick from those in better health, when the wearied guards had lain down to sleep in the corridors, Vinicius entered Lygia's dungeon and remained there till daylight. She put her head on his breast, and they talked in low voices of love and of death. In thought and speech, in desires and hopes even, both were removed unconsciously more and more from life, and they lost the sense of it. Both were like people who, having sailed from land in a ship, saw the shore no more, and were sinking gradually into infinity. Both changed by degrees into sad souls in love with each other and with Christ, and ready to fly away. Only at times, did pain start up in the heart of Vinicius like a whirlwind. At times there flashed in him like lightning, hope, born of love and faith in the crucified God. But he tore himself away more and more each day from the earth, and yielded to death. In the morning, when he went from the prison, he looked on the world, on the city, on acquaintances, on vital interests, as through a dream. Everything seemed to him strange, distant, vain, fleeting. Even torture ceased to terrify, since one might pass through it, while sunk in thought, and with eyes fixed on another thing. It seemed to both that eternity had begun to receive them. They conversed of how they would love and live together, but beyond the grave. And if their thoughts returned to the earth at intervals, these were thoughts of people who, setting out on a long journey, speak of preparations for the road. Moreover, they were surrounded by such silence as in some desert surrounds two columns far away and forgotten. Their only care was that Christ should not separate them, and as each moment strengthened their conviction that he would not, they loved him as a link uniting them in endless happiness and peace. While still on earth, the dust of earth fell from them. The soul of each was as pure as a tear. Under terror of death, amid misery and suffering, in that prison den, heaven had begun, for as he had taken him by the hand, and, as if saved and a saint, had led him to the source of endless life. Petronius was astonished at seeing in the face of Vinicius increasing peace, and a certain wonderful serenity which he had not noted before. At times even he supposed that Vinicius had found some mode of rescue, and he was piqued, because his nephew had not confided his hopes to him. At last, unable to restrain himself, he said, "How thou hast another look! Do not keep from me secrets, for I wish, and am able to aid thee. Hast thou arranged anything?" "I have," said Vinicius, "but thou canst not help me. After her death I will confess that I am a Christian and follow her." "Then thou hast no hope?" "On the contrary, I have. Christ will give her to me, and I shall never be separated from her." Petronius began to walk in the atrium. Disillusion and impatience were evident on his face. "Thy Christ is not needed for this. Arthenados one can render the same service." Vinicius smiled sadly, and said, "Oh, my dear, thou art unwilling to understand." "I am unwilling and unable. It is not the time for discussion, but remember what I said when we failed to free her from the Tullianum. I lost all hope, and on the way home thou didst say, 'But I believe that Christ can restore her to me.' Let him restore her. If I throw a costly goblet into the sea, no god of ours can give it back to me. If yours is no better, I know not why I should honor him beyond the old ones. But he will restore her to me." Petronius shrugged his shoulders. "Thee dost know," inquired he, "that Christians are to illuminate Caesar's gardens tomorrow?" "Tomorrow?" repeated Vinicius. And in view of the near and dreadful reality his heart trembled with pain and fear. "This is the last night, perhaps, which I can pass with Lygia," thought he. So bidding farewell to Petronius, he went hurriedly to the overseer of the Putrid Pits for his Tessera. But disappointment was in waiting. The overseer would not give the Tessera. "Pardon me," said he, "I have done what I could for thee, but I cannot risk my life. Tonight they are to conduct the Christians to Caesar's gardens. The prisons will be full of soldiers and officials. Shouldst thou be recognized, I and my children would be lost. Vinicius understood that it would be vain to insist. The hope gleamed in him, however, that the soldiers who had seen him before would admit him even without a tessera. So, with the coming of night, he disguised himself as usual in the tunic of a corpse bearer, and, winding a cloth around his head, betook himself to the prison. But that day the tesserae were verified with greater care than usual, and what was more, the centurion Sevenus, a strict soldier, devoted soul and body to Caesar, recognized Vinicius. But evidently in his iron-clad breast there glimmered, yet some spark of pity for misfortunes. Instead of striking his spear in token of alarm, he led Vinicius aside and said, Return to thy house, Lord. I recognize thee. But not wishing thy ruin, I am silent. I cannot admit thee. Go thy way, and may the gods send thee solace. Thou canst not admit me, said Vinicius, but let me stand here and look at those who are let forth. My order does not forbid that, said Sevenus. Vinicius stood before the gate and waited. About midnight the prison gate was opened widely, and whole ranks of prisoners appeared. Men, women, and children, surrounded by armed praetorians. The night was very bright, hence it was possible to distinguish, not only the forms, but the faces of the unfortunates. They went two abreast, in a long, gloomy train, amid stillness broken only by the clatter of weapons. So many were led out that all the dungeons must be empty, as it seemed. In the rear of the line Vinicius saw Glaucus the physician distinctly, but Lygia and Ursus were not among the condemned. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.